You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Welcome to the show. This podcast is about creativity, the professional aspects of creativity. Well, you could also say it's about creative thinking. You see, a career in a creative profession typically means carving your own path and making a lot of important decisions alone. And when competition is fierce and the market's uncertain, getting firsthand insight can really help. Join me as I interview full-time creative professionals and ask them to reflect on these really important moments in their career. Each episode, my guests open up about significant and sometimes even subtle choices that have led to their success. I know it can feel lonely out there, so I hope you find their stories as inspiring as I do. That's the sound of a traffic crosswalk in Collingwood. This episode was recorded in Melbourne. The ticking you hear is actually a system integrated to the traffic lights to know when to cross. It's for the visually impaired. It's fantastic. So this is me actually walking the streets in Melbourne. When I landed, I had such limited contacts that I needed to source my next guest, and I had no choice but to ask the locals for the best of the best. And that's when I was led to painter, teacher, and gallery owner Kez Hughes. I was told I could find her at St. Luke's Artist Colorman. It is a gorgeous shop. I walk in and it's beautifully merchandised. Behind the cash register is a wall of floor-to-ceiling oversized jars holding the most gorgeous pigment. I can't explain the sense of relief I felt when I met Kez. It's just really obvious, not only from the recommendations I got to meet her, but her presence, that she has a very true passion, intellect, and integrity for art. I was so thrilled she wanted to be a part of the show. She really lives and breathes art. I hope you enjoy this episode. So, Kez, thank you so much for having me here with this shop. I appreciate you having me for after hours. Lock the door up and get ready. I am staring at what I think is the most gorgeous display. So these are pigments. These are actual pigments.
They're dry pigments, and they're from the four corners of the globe. So we've got some mineral pigments. We've got earths from Italy. Every color imaginable.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I was saying when I walked in, I get the impression that this seems to be the go-to spot in Melbourne. Melbourne's a very creative city, and this seems to be like a working valve to the heart.
Well, we are sort of forensic investigators of your art studio nightmare problem. We do get a lot of artists coming in when everything's gone wrong, but we also get a lot of beginners and people that just need a reliable product that works. So all the staff at St. Luke are trained. They've got a degree in art. They're practicing artists. This shop's a little bit different to every other shop. It's not run by an accountant. I mean, the shop looks really beautiful because we think that artists who work in a shop should make everything look beautiful, have respect for the materials that they're selling, know what they're selling.
And you can see that. You can see that when you step in. It's really clean but thoughtful, and the product's laid out really nice. You were saying something before about not really being concerned about having the right product or having a lot of stuff on the floor.
It's about having the right product or providing a product that's from a manufacturer that cares about what they're doing. So providing, if it's paint, then it's paint and binder. It's not paint, binder, filler. It's not about ripping off people. It's about explaining how to use materials, where materials come from, the best application for them, the best price for them. And we're highly selective about the materials that we sell here. We don't have foam balls here. We don't have pipe cleaners, but we do.
Craft, right, and it's dividing the line, I get it.
Yeah, so it's about sort of, fine art production. It's about archival art production. It's about making things to last, and it's about passing on traditional methods of making art and, you know, helping people along the way, solving problems when things go wrong. We've got the answers. So
are you from Melbourne?
I'm from Melbourne, from the southeastern suburbs. Mm-hmm. So that's about 45 minutes out of town.
And when did you make the way into, like, downtown?
As soon as I could.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a lot of people's story.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on. I grew up in Roville. It's probably an hour and a half by bus and train into the city, and there was not a lot going on there. I think I moved out when I was about 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had two older brothers too, so they left before me and I couldn't wait to get out.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And so you went to what I think has been described as like the fame of Melbourne. It's, you know, multidisciplinary art college.
Victorian Art College.
I'm sorry. Could we use the word college in the United States? I just didn't want to dismiss the level of education it was. It's a university.
Yes. So it's owned by Melbourne University and it's Victorian College of Arts and Music now. It was part of the National Gallery School. So it's had a few reincarnations, but they have ballet there, they have music, they have photography, sculpture. So it's a bit like the Fame School. It's quite hard to get into, but, you know, a great, amazing place that just sort of is a magnet for, you know, international theorists, international artists. Sort of when a practicing artist or academic comes, often they go there and they give lectures to the students. So it's a really amazing university that provides community.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of art schools around in Melbourne?
There's a few other art schools, mm-hmm. but I guess I can't really speak about
them. For sure.
Them.
I was wondering because if it was just a volume thing, that there's just so many creative people here, maybe that's why it makes a creative city. I know that is one aspect of where I'm from in Philadelphia. I think it's true, the statistic that there's more art schools per capita than any other city in the United States. And so it's full,
wow.
genuinely full of creative people. And I think it's a byproduct of the creative vibe. And I just was wondering if that was similar to here.
I'm not quite sure. I don't have an overview. But the other universities are great. There's Monash University and RMIT as well. And all of them seem to have these amazing practicing artists teaching there. So I guess we're spoiled, definitely.
Well, as someone who... you seem very educated and grounded in the, you know, in style and technique and stuff. You know, did you really thrive in training? Because I'm asking because some people choose not to go to school and some people choose school and it can sometimes be a bit of a debate. And I was just curious how your experience was in formal training.
I think my experience at uni was completely formative because not so much for materials and techniques or learning how to use materials, but understanding the visual language of art. I would never have been able to learn that myself. And university was such a critical, hard, fraught, amazing, rich experience. So just to have ideas thrown at you, and I guess like when you land at university, some of the ideas, theory ideas or whatever, I just would never have been exposed to or would never have come to them myself. So
I felt very similar in my experience as well.
Yeah, so it was, you know, I may not have known which brush to use, but I had the ideas. Like it helped me understand ideas, it helped me understand art mm-hmm. history and what other artists were trying to say. So, and also it provided a whole bunch of like-minded people. So I wasn't alone in the studio anymore. All of a sudden, I was working on something and struggling on something that 40 other people were struggling on as well. And it's sort of like you go from being an isolated, you know, kid with strange ideas to suddenly being around people that are completely like you and nothing's weird anymore. So in that way, and I'm still friends with all the people, like the community from that university or studying with those people, it's kind of unbreakable. Everyone is so supportive. I still talk to most of them. So, you know, everyone's still kind of practicing. It's so important, I think, university, if you want to be an artist of some description, because it's just about the community is really what keeps you going mm-hmm. long term.
So you're talking about evolution, your own. I'm really curious of when, do you remember the moment in time that you developed your specific style for painting?
Well, I paint realistically. I paint documentary pictures of other people's art exhibitions, which is a bit of a mouthful. But I didn't start painting that at university. I was at university and I think that was more an exploratory time. It was a time to kind of defend what you were doing. And I studied a Bachelor of Fine Arts and then went through to honours and went overseas for the first time. So I went overseas to Sri Lanka and stayed there for a while. And all of a sudden my world was flipped. So I was in a community of artists over there and I felt like a spectator, like I was outside the bubble, not inside the bubble, and that really changed my perspective. I had to make some artwork while I was there and put on a show. And I realised that the group of people I was around didn't speak the same language, didn't have the same experience as me, so I had to kind of make a bridge. And, yeah, that was like a pivotal moment for me where my artwork completely changed. And I sort of brought a little bit of that home with me because I have this really amazing supportive community of artists around me. I thought, well, what would it be like to be looking at that? So I guess that's how this kind of collection of other people's artwork happened, or my recording or documentary of that.
Mm-hmm. And as someone like myself who wasn't born with the internet just being there at the ready and having to sort of find a way to integrate it into your work, what is the digital practices, or is there an impact to your work?
There is definitely, because I find photographs that I paint from online, but that has always just, I've always had a kind of ambivalent sort of relationship with technology. I've just kind of accepted technology and sort of gone with it and just use whatever I've accessed. I don't feel sort of frightened by it or anything like that. So it's just, to me, it's another tool. Like, the more tools, the better. You know, you just use what is around you. And we all sort of make art from what we're influenced by. So.
And so now you teach at the same school that you went to. So it's a bit of a coming back around.
That's true, which has kind of been amazing. I never thought, I always sort of wanted to teach in the background, but I hadn't pursued it. And I was lucky enough to get a job working in art materials about 10 years ago. And my old lecturer asked me to come and talk about brushes, or give a lecture about brushes. And then I completely freaked out because I just thought, oh my God, what do I really know about brushes? So I started researching like a crazy person and just read every book I could find. I worked with two older gentlemen in the shop who sort of just grunted their way through working. I love them, but they did. They were a little cantankerous. And I just started asking them questions, and then all of a sudden this, like, the floodgates opened and all this information just started appearing. And it was so incredibly inspiring to learn about the materials that I'd just taken for granted. I'd never thought about them before. And I realized that, you know, every single brush is there for a different use. Like, every hair is for a different type of, you know, paint medium, whether it's for egg tempera, for oil or encaustic, everything's got a reason. And that just became like a treasure trove of information. And then I realized also that it's a really rich, vast amount of knowledge that I was sort of standing on top of, like utilizing tools in the studio every day, but I just knew nothing about them. But in the end, I gave a really good lecture on brushes. I think passing on that information and seeing students kind of eyes light up, like, I never knew that, I've been using this the wrong way the whole time, that was incredibly infectious for me. I just thought, wow, this is amazing, like, all this information needs to be shared, you know.
That's awesome. So what has teaching taught you? I guess maybe you sort of got into it just then, is that the force, being forced, or just trying to do a really good job, you went and researched like crazy, and then it ended up just opening all this information to you, which seems really rewarding. Is there any other sort of thing that's like being back at your old school, seeing these students from now on the other side of the line as an adult, an established adult, looking at these kids? You know, did that bring up any feelings?
Jealousy. Man, that was a good time. Alcohol,
oh, yeah.
Minimal studio time, having good time, smoking lots of cigarettes, seeing music. No, actually, I think it's made me realise, like, I love teaching. It's made me realise that everybody learns in a different way, and you've got to be flexible as a teacher, but it's so worthwhile. Like, if you put in a lot of effort, usually the rewards, like seeing somebody happy or being able to change someone's practice, like being able to make something easy for them that they've been struggling with.
Oh, I could see that being really rewarding.
You know, just simple stuff, like people have been mixing up mud or wasting a lot of paint or wasting money on the wrong type of paint, just to be able to say, why don't you try this, and it works. And, yeah, I mean, that's just the biggest reward ever.
So what I really like about you being on the show is your approach to professional art. You know, you're teaching, you're lecturing, you're working in an art shop, and you're painting, and you're showing. That's, you know, that's a pretty big hustle, and I really admire that. So I'm curious what sense of success or accomplishment feels for you when you're juggling a lot of balls.
I think success to me is contentment, really. It's not about money. It's not about how much artwork I make. It's not about who shows in the gallery, or I guess it's just sort of philosophical contentment. I don't want to be like crazy happy or anything like that. So I just do what motivates me towards that. I don't like to be sitting on the couch with nothing to do. I've got to do something with my hands. I've got to be making something, changing something, out there helping someone, doing something like that. I find that to be the most rewarding, the most kind of just the place where I find that feeling of success and contentment, I guess. I might be really busy and I do complain sometimes, mm-hmm. my poor partner, but, you know, I guess there's so much opportunity. There's so much opportunity in Melbourne for creativity. Everybody's open and flexible and supportive. It's just like, why not, mm-hmm. you know?
So you were telling me about your gallery, and so explain to me, like, I'd love to know when you identified the need for it and your approach to this.
Well, I think because I paint other people's art, it sort of seems like a natural progression to curate art. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the art scene. I'm a big fan of other people's art. I can't stop buying art as well. So I'm sort of neck deep, really. Mm. It's like I live, eat and breathe it. But I've curated a couple of shows and I wanted to curate another one. And I was looking around with a friend of mine, Storm Gold, who's also a really amazing painter too. So we wanted to get together and curate something. But we just couldn't find enough free spaces. So we do have really great, really strong artist-run initiatives here and not-for-profit galleries, and there's a really strong commercial gallery scene as well. But some of the prices, I guess when you're spending a lot of money on materials and, you know, doing a lot of running around and printing and places take commission, and I sort of just wanted to find something that was maybe more financially viable. So Storm and I were talking, and then a space at the iconic Nicholas building came up. So the Nicholas building is right in the centre of the CBD, and it's been, I think it's heritage listed or something, or it's definitely has to be kept as artist studios. So this building, like, right, this really valuable address is maintained for artists.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's just this big building of studios, and there's milliners in there and graphic designers and an art bookstore, and all this amazing stuff goes on sort of right above street level. So a space became available there, and Storm's like, why don't we just start our own gallery? And of course I thought about it and like a minimal amount said yes. And then my sleepless nights, doing stuff, you know, after work and like just trying to fit in everything else. So from saying yes, my life is now super, super busy. Mm-hmm. But it all seems to be going really well. Like the aesthetic of the space is really nice, and we've got some amazing painters in for the first show. Someone from the US, Michael Bussell, and a few other great local artists. So we're pretty excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. And in some way, do you feel like you've come a long way? Because I know a little bit about your personal story of, you know, having to overcome some illness and such. Like, what was your mindset years ago when things weren't going so well and you were questioning art? Like, you have just this great story that I would love for you to share.
Well, I guess after high school, I was quite aimless and I didn't really know what I was doing, and I'm sure that's incredibly common. My family were, you know, supportive of whatever I chose to do. So I just ended up becoming a waitress, mm-hmm. which is just bizarre now that I think about it, because I was really crap at it. Yeah. It's a really hard job.
It really is.
So I was doing that and, you know, just living the hospitality lifestyle of taking lots of drugs and just working 48 hours and not thinking about anything. And then I became ill, like I fell over and pulled lots of muscles in my back and got diagnosed with arthritis in my hips. And I think I was 19, 20, something like that. And so I lost my job because I sort of couldn't walk, and ended up back in Roville, which is the last place on earth I wanted to be.
Right.
And just in the depths of depression, I just thought, oh my God, my life's over.
Right. At a young age, you're back at your parents. You thought you had moved out and like taken on the world, and here you are.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's what happens on TV.
Yeah.
It's like happening to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of couldn't believe it. So I just had a pity party and felt incredibly sorry for myself about 3 months, and just didn't get out of bed. And that became really boring really quickly.
Oh, that you were bored with your own sadness.
I just thought, oh my God, this can't continue. And I just had a lightning bolt moment where I was just sort of, like, it struck me, like on the TV again. I just thought, I'm not going to die. You know, I might be in pain and I might need some hip replacements, but I'm not going to die.
Mm.
So I should probably get out of bed and figure out what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you really turned it on its ass. You get given this, not so lovely situation, and you turned it around. And is correct me if I'm wrong, has it been like part of the driving force?
Well, yeah, it made me really prioritize what I was interested in. I'd never really had to think about that before. And it was art. I mean, it was definitely art. And I thought, you've just got to... My father would always say, fake it till you make it. I kind of live by that. It's so true. Like, I didn't want to get out of bed, but I just got out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And, just started looking around for a school, So, and from then on, it's just been really clear for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, from this kind of adversity, at least something really, positive has happened. So it's a blessing in disguise, I guess.
For sure. Do you do, when you're doing so much with work and with art, do you have a hobby that's not art-related, or something that you do that's not art-related when you have time off?
I watch a lot of documentaries, but probably not.
Yeah, that's fine.
No. I don't enjoy cooking. Gardening, I mean, I try these things for a little while, but I sort of... Yeah, just go back to the... I mean, I've got private tutoring and, teaching, sessional teaching down at the university. So there's not really a lot of time for much else. But I guess I'm happy. I'm happy
doing
that.
I did have this question about just... I haven't asked anyone yet since I've been in Australia. Just I noticed there's a lot of American television, a lot of American media. Do you feel any physical placement in the planet? Like, does it make you feel like you're far away? Or do you just guys not even care and just go about your lives in Australia? Do you know what I mean? Like, is there a vibe where you feel far away from other stuff that's going on? Or are you content in your bubble? Well, you know what I mean.
Well, no, people always say that about the US, that people, couldn't point out where another country is on the map or something. I've never really... felt like that. Perhaps this invasion of culture from other countries helps you to kind of globalize in some kind of way. Like, we are really far away. Like, getting stuff sent over, it's like $36 for a postal bag. It's crazy expensive. And, people always say, we're down under, whatever. But I don't know. Like, I've had BBC constantly streaming through the TV as a small child, Doctor Who and The Goodies or whatever, and then you've got The Simpsons, and so I don't know, we are far away, but I've never really felt isolated, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now I'm older and I travel more, and Asia is just there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really thought about being... Yeah,
okay.
Isolated from other countries.
Right.
Yeah.
So the gallery, it's opening soon, right?
It's opening next Friday.
That's exciting.
It's going to be a little scramble to the finish line, and then hopefully success. I'm really excited to be able to support a whole bunch of other artists, perhaps bring people to other artists' work, people who are not perhaps comfortable...
Do you have a legacy? Do you have a vision in mind for the gallery? Do you see where you want it to take it?
Yeah, I really want artists. I really want to place another gallery. Like, there's quite a few galleries that do this, but I just want a really great space that doesn't cost an arm and a leg for artists to show at. And I want people who are interested in, say, buying art or supporting art, for them to be welcomed and for it not to be sort of an elitist space. Like, I want it to be open and, yeah, like I just, it'd be great to have another space in Melbourne where people can show without having to pay $900 and sit a gallery. And so, yeah, just really help support and help the community and show some great art.
What's the name of it?
It's called Caves.
Now, I love asking people how they generate names. Like, where did that come from?
Well, Storm, who is part of the gallery with me, is much cooler than I am. So I had some, like, really awful names. I actually had a list, and I sweated over it for, like, 2 weeks, and then brought the list to Storm, and Storm's just like, we're going to call it Caves.
Yeah, that was nice.
So Storm's quite stylish, and he's in control of the aesthetics.
Branding.
Yeah, and I'm happy for him to do that because yeah. We've got a great gallery name.
Yeah, that is cool. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you having me here. This has been fun. I really like I like Melbourne a lot, and I appreciate the instant warm welcome you gave me. So it's really cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.